Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, February 13th, 2010. I'm Harley Schlanger and I will be your host today. It was about a week ago that Lyndon LaRouche cut through the lies and delusions that were being spread about the relative strength of the Eurozone compared to the United States economy and how the nations of the European community were handling the so-called crisis of Greece as the case of a government which was spending too much and all it needed was a good, healthy dose of fascist austerity, then all will be well, is what they were saying. Well, once again, events have proven that LaRouche was right, and the politicians, the Eurocrats, the financiers, and the media were all wrong. There is no Greece crisis. It's the Eurozone, with its banks and its European Union bureaucracy, which is crashing. And even more, we're now approaching an endgame scenario for the British Empire. Rather than admit that their 40-year drive to end national sovereignty and impose a global free market fascist dictatorship has failed, the operatives of the British Empire are escalating their drive for global fascism. In the United States, their leading operative has been the U.S. President, Barack Obama, who LaRouche has said must now be impeached if we wish to prevent a new dark age from taking over our planet. Our program today will discuss the strategic conjuncture, and it will include Dennis Small, who has just written an article for the EIR on the Banco Santander and the InterAlpha Banking Group, the agency that LaRouche exposed as nothing but an arm of British finance, and a bankrupt arm at that, filled with fake assets. Also, we will be joined by Lamari Navarrete, of LPAC TV. So Dennis and Lamari, welcome to the LaRouche Show.
Thanks, Harley. Pleasure to be here.
So Dennis, why don't you take it from the top? What happened this last week with the backdrop being the turmoil and chaos in Europe? What was it that LaRouche did?
Well, what LaRouche did is he, as he said, laid a trap for the British and drove them straight into a brick wall, which they hit in Europe in a European summit meeting that was held at the end of this week on Thursday and Friday. Let's take it from the top. What's going on is a total blowout of the world financial system, in particular the derivatives assets. They're not really assets, but the derivatives instruments which are held in the major banking centers internationally. As we know from the United States, that part that was located here hit the wall in the summer of 2007. It was perhaps triggered by what happened with the blowout of the subprime real estate market, but it certainly wasn't caused by that. But that was the incident which led to a complete disintegration of this gigantic speculative bubble. At the time, Lyndon LaRouche jumped right into the middle of it and said what has to be done immediately is we have to have his Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, which is to say stop all foreclosures and immediately put the entire banking system through a process of bankruptcy reorganization using the principles and the methods which Roosevelt had worked out in the middle of the 20th century, which is the so-called Glass-Steagall Act. And he also laid out, LaRouche did at that time, that what was needed was a four powers alliance of the United States with Russia, China, and India to put the world system through bankruptcy reorganization, put it in receivership, and build a new world credit system for development. Now, what's going on in Europe at this point, and it really did come to a head this week in a somewhat unexpected way, is that the entire system of the euro, that is to say, the idea of a single European currency under which the countries of Europe had abandoned most of their sovereignty to the single London-controlled currency, that came crashing down. And the way that that happened was around a crisis of insolvency of the banks, the creditor banks, of this entire Eurozone area centered in London.
And well, Dennis, the line that was coming out from the media and even from the European Union is that it was a crisis in the nation of Greece.
Yeah, right. Well, what LaRouche said today is that Greece has had that same crisis ever since the Peloponnesian War. nothing particularly new there. They called it a Greece crisis, or they've called it a crisis of the countries that they refer to as the pigs, which is Portugal, Ireland, Greece, and Spain. The bankers call them this. This is what the British call them. But LaRouche said, no, it's not a Greece crisis, and it's not a crisis of these countries or of their budgets. It's a crisis of the banking system prevalent throughout Europe, the London-centered system, which is completely insolvent and is trying to keep itself afloat by imposing fascist austerity on these countries.
Well, let me ask you, because the Financial Times report on this the last couple of days has been that the meeting of the EU finance ministers was designed to discuss a bailout of Greece. And of course, the report that came out yesterday is that no one really agreed on that. But what were they talking about? I mean, like the Greece question, if LaRouche, if what, given what LaRouche is saying, then what were they trying to do with this finance minister's meeting?
Well, what they were trying to do was laid out very clearly in the couple of days leading up to it. If you just look at the chronology over the course of the week, it's pretty interesting. What the British have been trying to do is to force the German government in particular, of Angela Merkel, to pick up the tab and make sure that the creditor banks of Greece, Spain, Ireland, Portugal, and so on get paid off at a point where no country is in a position to actually pay the totality of that debt. It's very much like the situation I was describing in July 2007 in the United States. If you try to bail it out, if you try to engage in a bailout operation like the TARP here, you're going to bankrupt the whole system and destroy the economy.
Well, then, Dennis, would it be fair to say that Greece, in a sense, is playing the role of an AIG as a pass-through to bail out the banks?
Well, actually, the AIG equivalent is more a bank by the name of Santander, which is a London-controlled bank, which is the single largest bank in the Eurozone, which has been used as a phony asset holding station, just like AIG, with no actual assets, no real capability, but which has been used by the British as a kind of shill or a stalking horse. Now, what happened over the course of this week is that the British were trying to force Europe to engage in the kind of bailout which they had gotten through in the United States in the 2007-8, 2008 period, 2007-2008 period. Contrary to what everything LaRouche proposed, as we know, in this country, the Wall Street banks were bailed out and the United States was destroyed. The physical economy was destroyed. What LaRouche said when he got wind of exactly what the British plan was around this European Union summit is he put out a statement saying, do not do what was done in the United States. Don't make the mistake of bailing out Wall Street. If you do, Europe will end up worse than the United States because you guys in Europe don't even have the elementary sovereignty which we still have in the United States.
But Dennis, let me just ask on this, and for our listeners, let me remind you, this is the LaRouche Show. If you have a question that you want to email in for Dennis or Lamari, you can send it to radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio, RADIO, at LaRouchePub, LaRouchePub.com. And we'll take your questions in the second half of the program. The question I have is that there's already been a bailout in Europe. The Bank of England has been pumping money, the so-called quantitative easing policy, the European Central Bank, in a way that's somewhat similar to the Federal Reserve. So this, what we're now talking about is an even bigger bailout coming down.
Sure, just like in the United States. See, this is like an addiction. This is just because you bail it out once, just because you take one hit of heroin doesn't mean that that's going to solve the problem. It's quite the opposite. The more you do that, the worse off you are. And exactly as happened here in the United States with this TARP process, it simply worsened everything. It created a bigger bubble. There are more fictitious assets. The physical economy underlying it all has been more destroyed. And so you have to escalate ever further in the wrong direction just to stand still. And that's the situation in Europe. Yes, true, they did engage in a certain amount of bailout. But what is happening now, the actual numbers, if you look at it, and this was just published by the Bank for International Settlements, the European banks have loaned to the so-called pigs countries, Portugal, Ireland, Greece, and Spain, over $2.1 trillion outstanding. And that's without counting the derivatives On top of that, there's derivatives, which increases the amount by at least an order of magnitude. So you're probably talking $20 trillion in financial instruments, which there is no way in the world that any of these countries can actually pay off. What the British want, and what they're using this crisis for, is to finish off any remains of sovereignty and to establish an empire. Now, empire is not our word only in this case. This was stated explicitly by one of the top advisors to the European Union, a guy by the name of Giovannini, who had been one of their technical guys who designed the whole system. And on the day before the summit, on Wednesday, with the summit scheduled for Thursday, Giovannini put out an article in the Italian newspaper Il Sole 24 Hours saying, "We need an empire. The imperial method is the one that works." And at the same time, the president of the European Union, a guy by the name of Van Rompuy, stated that what should happen is that the European Union should just put the countries in receivership, take over from them, assume the debt, 80% of the debt, and the "and" is the important part here, and take over taxation and other authorities from national governments in order to pay over the debt.
So what Van Rompuy is really saying is what Giovannini was saying, that we need
Exactly
an
the same
imperial
thing.
model.
Exactly the same thing. The imperial model, globalization to impose fascist austerity. When Lyndon LaRouche was briefed on these developments, within literally 2 minutes, he had said, "Put a statement out in my name. Tell the Europeans, do not do it, or they will end up making the same mistake we made on Wall Street, and it'll be even worse for them." And that was less than 24 hours before the meeting was scheduled to start, where it was unclear if the meeting was going to be able to impose this imperial model that Giovannini and Van Rompuy were proposing.
Well, the initial reports from the meeting were that they were discussing it and that they were trying to put out a palliative to the markets, that don't worry, everything's under control. But the reports we got at the end of the meeting were that they couldn't get an agreement. Well, what's the problem there?
Well, the problem there is that, in fact, some people in Europe decided that what LaRouche was saying was true, i.e., this could lead to a worse problem than Wall Street. And number two, that the British and their stocking horses like Banco Santander were, in fact, as bankrupt as LaRouche was saying. The form that this took is of a very unusual editorial published the day of the European Union meeting, Thursday morning, the day after LaRouche issued his warning, in the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, the FAZ, which is not a pro-development newspaper. It's kind of like the Wall Street Journal of Germany or
That's
something
one of the
like that.
banker's papers
Yeah.
in Frankfurt.
Yeah. And what they said was, essentially to the British, "Don't push us. Don't demand that Germany pick up the tab on this thing. If you push us, we will get out of the euro and go back to the German mark." Now, for that to come from circles such as the FAZ is really indicative of the level of just complete chaos going on in Europe and collapse of the British option.
Dennis, let's remind our listeners of that there was just a campaign for chancellor in Germany not that long ago, where that was one of the policy prescriptions of Helga Zepp LaRouche and her campaign: get out of the
Sure.
euro and go back to the Deutschmark.
Sure. And both she and her husband, Lyndon LaRouche, have been saying for years and years, well over a decade, that the European system, the EU system, with its euro, is fated for collapse. When, how, in what way, exactly on what date, unclear. But the dynamic of the process is such that this thing will not survive. And that's what just happened. This thing ran into a brick wall. People are listening to what LaRouche is saying. They are not prepared to go along with a British policy of the imperial model and fascism. And so they just jammed on the brakes. And they jammed on the brakes in a way that it still remains to be seen how this is going to end up. In other words, will a positive alternative be adopted or not? That's where LaRouche's unique role in this whole thing comes in, because the Germans at this point do not have a positive proposal. They're just saying, we don't want to pay for this mess. Somebody else has got to do it.
Well, it seems then one of the other things that's happening is that in a replay of what happened in the United States beginning in September 2008 with the bailout, that there was the germ of a mass strike process which really exploded onto the scene in July and August 2009. Obviously, the public employees in Greece, the farmers, seem to be generating a mass strike of their own in opposition to the demands from the European Union.
Yeah, and in a way that they themselves are undoubtedly quite unaware of. It's actually interesting that the German trade unions this week issued a call to other trade unions all across Europe saying we have a common enemy, which is the Maastricht European Union Treaty. We all have to stop this everywhere. The dynamic of the process, like I said, is one of meltdown of the European institution as such. And so the various players in the game, including Greek trade unionists and others, are going to be doing things that they would have been surprised themselves to see happen just a few months ago.
Now, Dennis, I want to just take up the question of Santander, and I'll bring in Lamari in a moment because she's working on a video for LPAC TV on this question. But how does Banco Santander fit into this picture?
Well, this whole European option, this whole Euro system, has been used by the British in a very interesting way. Back in 2007, as I mentioned, LaRouche made his proposals in the face of the blowout that had that hit at that point in July of 2007. LaRouche made the proposal for the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, and he also issued the proposal for a Four Powers Agreement. Now, what the British have done internationally to counter LaRouche is they have presented to the Russians, to the Chinese, to the Indians, and others, an alternative to LaRouche's plan. And the alternative consists essentially of the following. Don't listen to that guy. The dollar is going to go down. We have lots of money in Europe. Why? Just take a look at Banco Santander. They're loaded with money, and we can set up an alternative to what LaRouche is proposing, and we'll even make it sound good. We'll call it the BRIC countries, which is for Brazil, Russia, India, and China. And what you guys should do, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, is break with the dollar completely, and we'll set up an alternative based on the euro with these powerhouse banks like Santander. To which LaRouche responded last week and this, as this European crisis was blowing up, by saying, oh, really? Well, what assets does Santander actually have? What assets do the British have? You don't have nothing. And in fact, and this is what we've documented, Santander Bank is sort of like AIG. It has a lot on paper and nothing in reality. Its three main sources of supposed earnings. And mind you, we're talking about the largest bank in Europe now. It's nominally Spanish. It's based in Spain, but it's run by the British royal household. But its three main sources of earnings are British real estate, Spanish real estate, and looting and genocide in Brazil with the highest interest rates on the planet Earth. Now, that does not make for a very stable financial system. And LaRouche simply called the bluff on this thing, and everyone started scampering. That's what actually occurred.
The irony is that when the bank issued its year-end report, which showed on paper a large gain, I think it was 9 billion euros or something, that same day the stock of the bank started collapsing.
Sure, because LaRouche had issued a warning saying that these guys are actually bankrupt, and people just looked took a little bit of a peek behind the curtain of all of this confetti that Banco Santander had thrown up and took a look at what their situation was. And it's they have less than nothing. The British real estate market makes the United States look good in comparison, and Santander now issues one out of every two new mortgages in the United Kingdom. So that's not too good. The Spanish situation, I don't know how to even describe it. They're overvalued in their real estate market by probably 80%. Santander pioneered derivatives built on that house of cards, and they've already created a situation in Spain where there is 19% official unemployment, 45% unemployment among youth. So that's not worth anything at all. And then Brazil is another whole story. I can explain to that if we have time, but it's based on highway robbery.
Just to go back to the Spanish situation then again, as I understand it, also what Santander did was the same thing that was done by the JP Morgan Chase and the Goldman Sachs and others, which is that they use their holdings in of these virtual assets, these nominal assets and mortgage-backed securities and so on, to use that as collateral to borrow from the European Central Bank.
Yeah, and this was a pass through straight to London because you see, London is not formally part of the European Union and therefore could not, its banks could not go directly to the European Central Bank, the ECB. But Santander, based in Spain, could, and Santander has had a strategic alliance for over a decade with the Royal Bank of Scotland, which is run by the Queen's household. So Santander not only took its existing garbage and toxic paper to the ECB to get money in exchange for it, just like happened with the TARP, but Santander went a step further. They actually started issuing more toxic paper intentionally with the sole purpose of passing it off on the ECB. And they did indeed get 20, 30 billion euros of funds, which effectively was a pass-through to the British. Again, sort of like what AIG did with Goldman Sachs.
Now, Dennis, one of the things that Lyndon LaRouche brought up is that this idea of the BRIC was being used to disorient people in Russia who otherwise would be open to the idea of the four-power agreement of LaRouche. And Lynn identified later in the week that you have this character, Kudrin, in the Russian government. I think he's a finance minister who just was in London. We have an email from one of our regular listeners asking, why won't Putin or Medvedev fire Kudrin? To what extent has this Santander case been registered by the relevant parties in Russia that might lead to something of that kind?
Oh, well, that's why this thing is so interesting because here, let me take a step back so we can look at the picture a little bit more broadly. The period around 2007 was a decisive turning point for the planet in its entirety. And the pivot of that situation was the July-August blowout of the financial system in the United States and internationally. And LaRouche's July 25th, 2007
Right.
international webcast, where he forecast that that blowout was about to occur, which occurred a few days later in point of fact, and made those policy proposals which I've made. The HBPA and the Four Powers idea, and so on. Now, around that central development, the blowout of the system and LaRouche's proposal for a solution to this, there was frenetic activity going on a little before and a little after by the British Empire and Santander Bank in particular to set up an alternative to what LaRouche was proposing. Now, what did they do? They did two things. They did one political thing and they did one economic thing. Politically, what they did is that Santander, the foundation associated with the president of the Santander Bank, it's called the Marcelino Botín Foundation. The owner of the Santander Bank is Emilio Botín. In 2006, right before the blowout, seeing what was coming, established what they called a BRIC project. In other words, a project to study the prospects for Brazil, Russia, India, and China. And they held seminars, one seminar a year in 2006, 7, 8, and 9 on each of those four countries, in which they brought in top policymakers from those countries to entice them with the idea of break with the United States, don't try anything with LaRouche, come with Europe, come with Banco Santander. So politically, they set up a whole project to pull people in that direction. At the same time, that was the political side. Economically, what they did with the British is that they tried to bolster the meltdown coming in Europe by doing what? Not by putting it through bankruptcy reorganization, but by building another speculative pyramid on top of it. Concretely, Banco Santander, along with a British property company called Grosvenor Properties, it's the largest real estate firm in Great Britain. It is owned by the 6th Duke of Westminster, who is a cousin of the Queen and who is the godfather of Prince William. And incidentally, if you read the Daily News closely, you'll find out he was caught with what they described as high-end prostitutes in New York City. Not sure what the high-end refers to, but nonetheless, that's the Daily News for you. And the Duke of Westminster, who incidentally owns hunting estates in Spain along with Botín that are like 50, 60 square miles in size, that are feudal empires. But nonetheless, what the Duke of Westminster did with the head of Santander is that they started a new game of financial derivatives on property holdings that had not existed until the mid 2005 and 2006. And what they did is they took the whole Spanish and British real estate bubble and they multiplied it by 1,000, which is what happens with derivatives. So they just made the whole thing worse. So that was their response politically and economically to the systemic threat coming from LaRouche's intervention in that period around 2007. So yes, of course, the people in Russia and China and elsewhere know exactly what LaRouche is saying. They know exactly the counter proposal of the British, and it is an all-out political war over which side in this whole thing is going to win. And what LaRouche has said, just to summarize the point, is that some people think that the B in BRIC stands for Brazil. He says it doesn't. It stands for the British. And LaRouche said he would very much like to help out Brazil and Brazilians and their physical economy, but right now they're being used as simply a pawn in this British game to destroy the only alternative to this breakdown of the world system, which is LaRouche's four powers proposal. That, I think, is the context in which you got to look at this thing.
Well, and this is a fascinating story. I want to bring in Lamari, who's probably well known to people who go on the LaRouche PAC website. Lamari has done some of the off-the-cuff, and she did a really remarkable program on the blue-collar worker. Now, Lamari, you're working on something now on this Banco Santander case. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, we have an LPAC video. We want to introduce people to the Santander looting operation, but of course we want to point people to the bigger picture, which I think was highlighted very well by Dennis, which is the four powers, which is a huge the BRIC nations, that is, the BRIC proposal, which is a distraction from the four powers of Lyndon LaRouche, which of course includes the key nation of the United States instead of Brazil. And really, we want to give people a sense that what you have is the same game that has been played by the British over and over. Maybe you have a Spanish bank thrown into the picture. Maybe you have various nations involved. But when you actually get down to it, what you have is an intent by the British to destroy nations, to loot them, and to establish in their place an actual financial dictatorship, as what you see going on in Europe at the time, at this moment. So some of the things we will be going through are what is Santander? You know, what are the British connections to Santander, and how it's being used as a looting operation of nations, most especially what you see happening in Brazil. And Dennis didn't go through all of the details of it, but one thing that you have happening in Brazil is a type of carry trade operation where you have banks who are investing, who are buying up in bonds in Japan, for instance, nations which have low interest rates, right, and carrying them over into Brazil. You know, in Brazil, you have right now a 8.75% interest rate on Brazilian bonds. But what is actually being taken out of this nation is really the looting of the population. If you look at the conditions the Brazilian population is living in, what you see is an actual financial bubble which is being built up by the British interests. So these are some of the main points we want to bring across to people, in addition to, you know, some of the slime mold that exists in the form of the Inter-Alpha Group, which is an international grouping of banks led by the Rothschild interests. And, you know, bring out for people in the oncoming weeks through several more editorial statements really what is the nature of this operation. So that's pretty much what we have in the form of an editorial statement that's going to be coming out in the next couple days.
So the listeners can go to LaRouchePack.com, and you say by early this next week it should be done?
Yeah, by Tuesday we'll have something up on it on the website.
All right, now you mentioned something on this question of the carry trade. I don't think people realize that they just can't go and borrow money at 0% and engage in picking up these bonds where they basically are getting an 8% spread. But this is what was part of the Japanese yen carry trade, then the Iceland carry trade. I'd just like to ask Dennis, how does Brazil, Lamari said it's through austerity, what does that look like in the country, in a nation like Brazil? How can they offer that kind of return?
Well, people can, of course, get loans at 0% interest. You simply have to be a completely bankrupt bank with no assets whatsoever and probably have a name that sounds like Goldman Sachs.
I think we have very few banks that listen to this program, but go ahead.
Oh, I don't know. I'd be surprised if there weren't some people trying to find out what we're saying against them. So, but yeah, no, it's exactly as Lamari was describing it. People borrow. Banks borrow money where it doesn't cost them anything, like in the United States where they're loaned money almost for free, or in Japan. They take the money to Brazil, they convert it into the local currency, which is called the real. They then buy Brazilian government treasury bonds, just like our government sells treasury bills here. Every country does. Brazil sells their treasury bonds in reals, and they pay an interest rate of 8.75%. Parenthetically, let me just say, I was looking through the wires today. Brazil is planning to increase their interest rate. So that's probably going to go up. So if you put your money into that, you get back 8.75% at the end of the year. But it's actually much, much more than that, because the financial interests have been also orchestrating things over the course of the year 2009 to revalue the real, or appreciate the value of the real vis-a-vis the dollar. So the dollar is being devalued while the value of the real is increasing to the tune of 27% over the year 2009. So that means that if you bring in dollars, convert it to reals, and you take your reals out at the end of the year, you not only get your 8.75% interest, you've also won 27% by the revaluation of the Brazilian currency. So when you buy dollars, you get that many more dollars back. So you're actually getting an annual return on paper of over 35% a year.
But I mean, doesn't that mean then that that has to be gouged out of living standards
sure,
in Brazil?
Sure, because where this comes from, you have a Brazilian government debt which has been rising up into the stratosphere over this entire period. Just by incredible amounts, like a 44% increase from 2003 until today. And what that means is that the government and the Treasury have to pay a 35% annual interest rate. Now, where does that come from? It comes from what the government does not spend on education, what it does not spend on infrastructure, what it does not spend on energy, what it does not spend feeding its population. So, you know, the numbers look like they're just numbers on a piece of paper. The actual reality is the destruction of the living standard to the point of starvation and desperation of the vast majority of the Brazilian people.
But I do understand, Dennis, that the Brazilian government has enough money to hand out condoms to visitors who come there for Mardi Gras.
Well, you know, there was a report that was really kind of funny, because the chief economist of Banco Santander in Brazil, who obviously had read what LaRouche said about it the day before, rushed out to give a press conference and sort of denied everything LaRouche said. No, Spain does not have a problem. No, Banco Santander doesn't have a problem. No, Brazil doesn't have a problem. We are protected and we are safe. There will be no contagion. And I really was reminded, you know, we're safe, there won't be any contagion, we're protected. This is exactly what the Brazilian government is doing. People arriving for a carnival, for Mardi Gras, all foreign visitors are being handed out free condoms at the airport as they arrive. So they too are being protected, they're safe, and there will be no contagion. So I wouldn't put my money on
but
either.
But watch
of
out
those.
For deflation. But, Lamari, I have a question for you that I get from people. I've been touring the country recently doing some town meetings on the question of organizing the Obama impeachment. You know, LaRouche has said, we've got to pose to the American people, do you have the guts to impeach Obama? And in these discussions, one of the things that comes up is the great appreciation from our supporters out there for the work that you and others are doing in Purcellville with LaRouche PAC TV. And someone asked me the other day in San Francisco, well, how do you get all these people who know so much about economics? Now, I know you quite well. I know that fortunately you never studied economics at a university, but it might be of interest to our listeners, when you take up a question such as preparing an editorial statement on this question of Santander, the way you and Dennis have been describing it, how do you go about it? What kind of work are you doing to get this story out?
Well, I think you have to start with what's real. And in the case of what you'll see in the streets of Mardi Gras, you're not going to see much real there. But you have to, I think, it, starting from the standpoint of what is the real conditions of life for the population. And usually when you take, for instance, a newspaper like the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Slimes, you can most of the time just use it as toilet paper. And just if you rely on what's the reality of the conditions of the majority of the population on the planet, you tend to be on the right track more so than any of the standard lines, right, from the politicos. And I think in the case with this in particular, it is it's a challenge, right, to take up something which is so big and intricate like the Santander question, right? You're thinking a week ago, 2 weeks ago, perhaps it wasn't really on your radar. But what you knew was taking place is that there is an international looting operation because the actual physical economy has not been operating on the level it should be for about 30 years, right? We've seen a 30-year looting operation in the world, and that includes what we've seen here in the United States with the shutdown of all of our industrial centers. And, and also, of course, the biggest factor being the attack on the creative potential of our population, right? So these factors are of the utmost importance. These are the factors that are elaborated by Lyndon LaRouche in his economics. And if you start from there rather than some analysis of some creep in the Sunday newspaper who is just lying, right, then you tend to stay or to tend to be on the right track with these sorts of things. And in the case of what we're producing right now with the Santander issue, focusing on the type of distraction which is being built up away from the potential of the four powers is of utmost importance. And, you know, and then it brings it back to also the situation politically in the United States, where we also have a huge roadblock here. We have our Obama problem, right? And him adopting the policies of the British, you know, continuing to adopt these anti-creative, anti-industrial economic policies are a huge factor, a huge problem in this situation as well. But you have to look at it as one big operation, right, with Obama included, which is being run by the British, right? And the British policy is no sovereign nations and complete dictatorial control.
So in the piece you're going to do, you're going to draw these conclusions so people can figure out for themselves what we mean when we say we're fighting the same battle as we fought in the American Revolution for a constitutional republic against an empire. You'll make those connections and give people things they can look at to learn for themselves, right?
Yeah, we'll draw that out in this production. And we also have other productions where we'll continue to draw this out in the next coming days.
Well, this will be appearing on LaRouchePAC.com website in the next couple of days. And I think this is something that our listeners should send a link with this over to their banker, because their bankers, especially the small and regional bankers, are being gobbled up by banks like Santander and Citibank and Bank of America, and there's no credit for physical production. Dennis, let me get back with you, because we talked a little bit earlier about the derivative question, and we do have an email from another regular listener, Adam Rodriguez, who wants to, his first question, he says, where can I go to find a listing of all the over-the-counter derivatives? I'm pretty sure there is no such listing. But he asks what it means when they say these are nominal debts, or as Lynn has been saying, the derivatives are fake assets. So what is it that these bankers are doing with derivatives other than building up bubbles?
Well, they're killing people. I mean, they're... let me answer another question instead. I'll come back to this,
okay.
But I've been thinking about what you asked before on, from this other person on the Kudrin question, and also what you were raising on the on Obama, what Lynn is saying, LaRouche is saying about
right.
how what's required is, does the American people have the guts to do this? And I think this really speaks to the central issue here, because what it takes, and what it takes to think and be able to present an actual picture, as LaRouche constantly does, like around the Santander question, or what the LPEC site presents in the videos, is, for starters, it takes courage. In other words, you have to be prepared and willing to do what people often refer to as thinking outside the box. Now, there's a problem with that expression, because when you say, well, you have to think outside the box, it sort of implies that it's different than thinking inside the box, that there is such a thing as thinking inside the box. What I want to argue is there is no such thing as thinking inside the box, because if it's inside the box, it's not thought. It's cowardice. It's capitulation. The issue about getting rid of Obama, the issue of the impeachment question, is whether people are prepared to actually think from the standpoint of an alternative that is not what they see before them today. The problem with the government in Russia, with well-meaning people like Medvedev and Putin and so on and so forth, about getting rid of someone like Kudrin and the people who are obstacles, they have to be prepared to do what looks like, you know, jump off the edge of the cliff, to go to a completely, totally new system and not try to simply patch things up as they exist today. And that's the same thing that's involved in addressing the current crisis. The reason that LaRouche has the insight and the capability of understanding what's going on, besides the issues of a tremendous amount of knowledge and information and insight and so on and so forth, it's essentially a question of political courage to be prepared to fight for and to throw your lot in completely with something which many people will deny even exists, because they don't see it before their nose. They don't see it now. Well, where are the four powers? Well, it doesn't exist. Well, how can you rely on something which is so ethereal? It's not really quite there. So I really think that the fundamental question in all of this, both in our problem in the United States of getting rid of Obama and pulling together the four powers internationally, and in people actually understanding economics, is the willingness to think in terms of starting from the standpoint not of what they think exists and they see before their nose, but starting from the standpoint of the actual reality, which is sometimes not perceived by their senses. What Lamari was talking about, the actual physical state of the economy. And if you go at it from that standpoint, and you look at it that way, then it requires the kind of command leadership which LaRouche has uniquely provided internationally, to present to people a concrete alternative that actually works, and that people can get a sense would function as an alternative to the insanity that's going on now. People hate what's happening. There's no question about it. But if you look at this whole, if you look at the recent situation, look at what happened in Copenhagen. Okay, Copenhagen was very good in the sense that the Chinese especially, but also the Indians and the Russians, simply put their foot down and told the British, forget it. No way, we will not go along with this global warming hoax. So they jammed their foot on the brakes. But nobody at Copenhagen, outside of the LaRouche movement, actually presented a positive alternative, that is to say, a concept of how the ecology really works, a concept of energy flux density, a concept of Vernadsky's view of the noosphere, the biosphere, and the lithosphere, and so on. That wasn't done. That comes only from someone who is, as they say, thinking outside the box. Same situation in Massachusetts, right? Tremendous development. The population put their foot down. They said, forget it. We've had it. No more. We're not going to take this anymore. But the guy they're sending to the Senate is not exactly clear on what the economic policy of the United States should be. And this is the way things work in a mass strike process. You've got this tremendous explosion. People have had it. They've come to the end of the line. But the crucial element is that element of leadership, of ideas combined with guts to present people an actual alternative to the insanity they see around them. And that's the unique role that's played by LaRouche and by the LaRouche Youth Movement. And I think what comes of these developments in Europe, the European Union developments, where that also hit a brick wall, is very much going to depend on the degree to which people see and act on the specific alternative which LaRouche is proposing. Not just the horror, but that we have to have a Glass-Steagall reorganization of the entire world financial system. And that'll move things forward.
Hello?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm here. I had a technical problem there, I guess.
Okay, well, let me just take what you were saying, and I want to pose another question to Lamari, because at the last webcast, Lyndon LaRouche presented what you might call another visual demonstration of this with his map that showed the division of the world into those countries that are developing, that he colored in bright red, namely mostly the Russia, India, China, and the immediate surrounding nations such as Japan and South Korea and Indonesia, versus the dead countries, which included all of Europe, versus those who are heading toward dead, namely the United States. And I was thinking about this in terms of when you brought up the question of energy flux density, that you look at Brazil, and Brazil has aspirations to become a great nation. On the one hand, Brazil had a very advanced idea of a nuclear program at one point, but they seem to have been pulled into this biofuels and alternative energy. And I'd actually like to ask Lamari about how we use these kinds of visual images to create an effect. And then, Dennis, maybe you can comment on the energy question in just a moment. But Lamari, I was quite struck by the example that Lynn used, and I think these are the kinds of things that really grab people's attention and force them to rethink their assumptions.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you think in terms of the real physical economy and not in terms of, you know, mystical beliefs of, China taking over the world or something like that, but you think, no, it's What is it that the nations of Asia are doing, which is in the right direction at this moment? And it's really that they're going with the highest level of technology that exists. They're driving towards that. And I think it is remarkable to look at the map, even for myself, to see, wow, there is a real consolidation of the nations in Asia towards this development. But why is it that you have the United States and the area of the Americas, right, which was once the region of the world which was driving and aspiring towards development of the highest level for the highest potential of mankind, and now that's become a complete, you know, stagnant, almost like a stagnant pool of water in terms of technological development. As you see with the development also with the shutdown of the Constellation program from NASA.
Sure.
I think it's remarkable. It's also paradoxical because people are thinking, you're saying the United States has to be involved in the four powers, but the United States isn't pushing the innovation at this point. True, but what you do have in the United States is a historical context, a constitutional system, credit system, that has not been developed anywhere in the world, has not been tried and tested as it has been in the United States. And so you have something very unique here that needs to be actually applied to this development. And so rather than thinking of ourselves as, you know, the Americas getting away from Europe, now we have to think of ourselves more so as, you know, going west and developing with Asia as one planet, and then going up off the planet, you know, to the other planets within the solar system. I think it's a helpful what Lynn laid out, you know, in the form of this graph or this map is helpful to bring that out for people.
Yeah, it causes an immediate shock effect. And Dennis, I'd like you to comment on this seeming enigma of Brazil on the one hand aspiring to space and nuclear technology, and on the other hand going with financial crap game and biofuels.
Yeah, right. Well, Brazil was one of the countries, like the United States and also Argentina and South America, which LaRouche categorized in this middle brown area in terms of intent, because that's what Lynn was trying to get across with this map. And it is completely shocking. I was also very taken by it. It's a very effective, gives you an immediate overview of the planet. And you see those countries whose intent, whether they're currently rich or poor, but their intent is to move forward with a technologically progressive approach to the economy, and those that have simply thrown in the towel altogether and have gone with British Malthusianism. And the United States is still a battleground, and Brazil is a battleground. It's quite interesting because it's exactly as you state. On the one hand, they have engaged in the worst forms of environmentalism and Malthusianism, actually, with their own energy policies in the country. They're among the world's leading promoters of biofuels. On the other hand, they have a very advanced, technologically very advanced part of their economy, not only nuclear energy, but as you mentioned, aerospace. And they've actually moved forward. They have actually finally now gotten back to building Angra 3, which is one of their major nuclear plants. So Brazil is very much is a country which is itself a battleground. I think the real issue here, and this is what you get from Brazil, you have a country which has a very oligarchical type of problem, which is to say the political leadership of the country don't give a damn about their own population. That's the simplest way to put it. They had slavery there until the 1880s and 1890s, way after the United States, way after the rest of South America. And there still is a complete division in the country between those who live in complete misery and slave-like conditions and those who live in protected feudal estates. But what characterizes Brazil otherwise is a kind of pragmatism in thinking, which is the worst form of so-called thinking inside the box, which isn't thinking at all. Their view is that you've got to face up to whatever the box is and make the best of it inside it. And that's how they're negotiating at this point, and tacking and turning and so on. And LaRouche's approach is exactly the contrary, to never, never tolerate anybody's definition of the box that you're supposedly in, and to think in terms of what the actual requirements are for the planet. If you look, coming back to the issue of derivatives, I didn't want to brush that aside, but I thought it important to make a slightly broader point. Mm-hmm. If you look at the issue of derivatives from that standpoint, derivatives are completely nonsensical and psychotic. I mean, it's the idea of creating some monetary value based on bets about future performance of non-existent assets. I mean, it's just the height of psychosis. If you translated that into the realm of psychology and walked into a psychiatrist's office and said something equivalent, they'd immediately put a straitjacket on you and start loading you up with meds so that you didn't do damage to yourself.
Well, which is the reason that we wanted a PCORA commission, so that we could start helping these people so they wouldn't hurt themselves and everybody else.
Yeah, and anyone who buys into this stuff actually is doing terrible damage to the world economy. What has to be done with the derivatives is very simple. Just flush the toilet. Just, you know, sometimes that's what you just got to do, flush the toilet.
And that's the global Glass-Steagall that LaRouche just wrote a piece on this that's up on the website. And there's talk of this in Europe. There's talk of it around the world. But the fight is here in the United States. And Lamari, I'd like you to just say something about your thoughts on the progress of the LaRouche congressional campaigns, because this issue of courage that's required is being demonstrated by Rachel Brown and Keisha Rogers and Summer Shields, who are going before Democratic Party groups and telling them that as Democratic candidates, they are calling for the impeachment of Obama. So how, from your vantage point in Purcellville, I assume you've burrowed out from under the snow, how do these campaigns look to you from there?
From here, I haven't got some of the most recent updates on some of the campaigns myself, but I know for a fact that what we do with these campaigns freaks out the establishment, freaks out the Democratic Party hacks and regulars and that sort of thing, because they're not representing a party. And I think there's some people in the Democratic Party, especially the diehard Obama supporters, who just don't get what process is underway right now with the mass strike. Well, you don't have a division along party lines within the population. You have people who were Democrats before who might be voting Republican now, but it's not about parties. It's a vote against the president at this point. And I think representing that, representing an actual force in the nation, which is outside of all of the party lines, is really freaking out the regular establishment of the Democratic Party, and those who basically don't really get the fact that there is a mass strike taking place right now. So, I mean, that's what I can say about that, but I don't have some of the latest updates on the campaigns myself.
Well, I would encourage our listeners again to go to the LaRouchePAC.com website, and you can pick up the three websites of the three LaRouche congressional candidates. And some of them have some very compelling footage. I know Keisha here in Houston has been just causing conniptions in the Democratic Party officials who don't want to face these things. So you can see the three websites of the candidates on the LaRouche PAC website. But Dennis, we have about 4 minutes to go, a little less than that. So to finish things up, LaRouche popped a delusional bubble. The market, so to speak, had a moment of truth. There was some collapse. There's now an attempt to paper it over. What do you see happening in the next couple of weeks in Europe, and what are the implications for the United States?
Well, I think the most important thing is the recognition of the unique role LaRouche is playing in this situation today, both in Europe and internationally. What I see happening is that this battle will continue to play itself out in Europe. I'm hopefully what we'll have is a definite defeat of the British on their insane proposals for Europe, and the whole European charade of the European Union will come crumbling down, creating the circumstances in which you can actually get back to national sovereignty and to national currencies. The key thing will be pulling together the forces around the four powers around LaRouche in the United States to quickly enough pull together an alternative to this meltdown of the financial system that's going on, because unfortunately it's not just the financial system that's melting down. You have a disaster with the physical economy. You have people unemployed. You have people being thrown out of houses and so on.
Well, and LaRouche has been emphasizing that because of the continued existence of the oligarchical institutions and the parliamentary systems in Europe and the surrender to Maastricht and then the Lisbon Treaty, it's going to have to come from the United States.
Right, which is why I was emphasizing LaRouche's personal role in this thing, because the biggest impact this is actually going to have in the immediate is, besides the defeat of the British in this European game that they're playing around Santander, it's a proof of principle which is of crucial importance to actually getting the four powers established for the Russians, for the Chinese, and for our battle inside the United States to get Obama a job he can handle, like resting in an old folks home or something like that, so that we can get on with the business of reconstructing the world economy. And LaRouche's personal role in this, as exemplified in this last couple of weeks' battle around the European theater, is of crucial importance in this situation.
Well, we will be having, as you've heard on this program, the new program on the Santander and its implications. That should be up in the next couple of days. We also have a very good video that I'd recommend to people on the impeachment. Lamari, have you seen that one? We may have lost Lamari. So in any case, up on the LaRouche PAC website, you can see an editorial statement on the necessity for the impeachment of President Obama. He did it to himself. We're just drawing the conclusion that has to be done. So I'd like to thank Dennis and Lamari for being with us today. We'll be back next week on the LaRouche Show on Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. In the meantime, go early and often to LaRouchePAC.com. Support the LaRouche candidates for Congress in the Democratic primaries in your states. And if you don't live in Texas, Massachusetts, or California, you can still contribute online to the campaigns. So, Dennis, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Harley.
And this next issue of the EIR will have very extensive coverage on this, right?
Yes, that's right. We have two, three articles on this, which should help LaRouche in his operation of doing some damage to this British Santander gambit.
And it's not just information, it's intelligence employed with mean intent.
I think that's fair to say.
Okay. Thanks, Dennis Lamari.
Yep, thank you.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
Thank you.